Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? Get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites. The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now you're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour every Friday at 1:30. We look ahead to all the games coming up this weekend. This weekend we have a slate full of some juicy, juicy FA Cup fixtures. Joining us remotely this week, stats man and is odds compiler from Paddy Power, Emmett O'Keefe. Emmett, how are you? Happy New Year.
Has gone into looking forward to kind of a sporting distraction given the week that's in it.
Well, that's it. And on the other line, I'm in the unusual position of being in the hot seat this week. And on the other line is the man who is single-handedly fighting for the revival of the mustache, Ger Gilroy. How are you doing?
Nice of you to notice, Enda.
Well, I know.
How did you get there?
When was the mustache last cool? Was it when you were in your teens?
I mean, was it ever cool, Enda? I mean, I think, look. You obviously, as a millennial, know that facial hair made a massive comeback in the last decade or so. This is just a natural extension of that.
Is it just that you have forgotten your razor since the November or Movember?
Obviously, our good friends at Gillette have been supplying us on Team OTV with high quality razors that last twice as long as others. So I think you'll find that this is very carefully sculpted.
Well, you should do something like Aston Villa to win the FA Cup, or Aston Villa, until they get relegated, you should continue growing the mustache like the Tyrone players back in the day. But anyway, it is an FA Cup weekend. We are looking ahead to all the games this weekend. Just before we get into the actual action, let's run through the fixtures. So tonight we've got Aston Villa against Liverpool. Aston Villa are fielding an under-23/under-18s team in that game. Wolves against Crystal Palace. Then on Saturday, we have Everton against Rotherham, Blackpool against West Brom, QPR take on Fulham, Stoke City, Michael O'Neill's Stoke City against Leicester City, two Northern Irish managers going head-to-head in that one, Arsenal against Newcastle, and Man United and Watford are the 8 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday. On Sunday, we have Crawley Town against Leeds, Chelsea against Murrayfield, Man City take on Birmingham, Marine, the only non-league side in the FA Cup so far, take on the mighty Spurs, Pottergarmon's Newport County take on Brighton, and Stockport against West Ham is the 8 o'clock kickoff on Sunday. Before we get into those fixtures and start analysing, start looking at them, let's look at our Twitter poll, and it's always really the talking point when it comes to an FA Cup weekend, is how important the FA Cup actually is. And we asked, should the teams fighting for the top four / fighting off relegation in the Premier League focus on the league rather than the FA Cup? And just about edging it is focus on the league. 54% of our viewers, of our voters, voted for focus on the league. Ger, do you follow that? Do you think that is the right decision for a team fighting for an actual place in the league this year, as opposed to sort of a mid-table side?
I think that you've got to take each club on its merits there, and I think that what you absolutely need to do is separate the teams who expect to be competing for trophies, and therefore it's taken as given that they're going to try and win this competition. But at the same time, even within that, there's a subset. So Liverpool and Man City expect to be able to compete for every single trophy that they enter because their squads are so big. For Manchester United, I actually don't think that the trophies that Jose Mourinho won were signposts towards greatness or signposts towards that team cresting back to relevance at European level, which is where a club like Manchester United are 100% judged. Are you competing for the Champions League season in, season out, and for the Premier League season in, season out? And they're not at that point just yet. They're getting to a point where they might just be credible title challengers. In this instance, and under these circumstances, I don't think Solskjaer should be going for this competition. And to be honest, I actually don't think he should be going for the Europa League either. You can make a case for the Europa League that experiencing big European nights will be good for that team. It'll be good for Rashford. It'll be good for McTominay. It'll be good for that defence. Harry Maguire is not a very experienced defender at European level, despite the fact that he is an England international and the captain of Manchester United now. So you can make the case. You might be able to twist my arm on that. But the FA Cup, Arsenal won the FA Cup last year. Arsenal have a great record in the FA Cup since they actually stopped competing at the top tier and being legitimate contenders for the Premier League title or in European competition. So it's just this bauble. There are teams in the middle of the league for whom I would, if Aston Villa hadn't had coronavirus this week, I would be saying, this is it. Let's go. Let's win a trophy, because you're not realistically going to compete over the course of the rest of the season for the Premier League title. And for the first time in about 20 years, it looks like you're not going to get relegated. So go for it. It's those clubs in that tier that I think this is a competition that they should take unbelievably seriously. Play your top players. It's Liverpool. It's Man City. It's that tier. And then if you're Sheffield United, already relegated, there's a 100% chance that they're going to be relegated. You are absolutely going as hard as you can at this competition, because it might restore some glory to the club this year and, you know, distract everybody from the shit show that is real life.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things to this. There's obviously the argument that you win a trophy and that spurs you on to go on and compete for the Premier League, and maybe it's a stepping stone. But if you look at previous examples of that, I mean, United won the Europa League under Jose Mourinho. That didn't really spring on to anything. And they also won the FA Cup. Louis van Gaal was sacked a couple of days later after that. So it doesn't necessarily follow it. So in a year like this year, when you have such a condensed season in fixtures, when it comes to it, and you're actually genuinely, because everyone else is so bad, competing for a Premier League title for the first time in 10 years, then you probably should focus on that rather than focus on winning a trophy and getting it over the line. The problem is that I suppose it comes with a manager like Solskjaer, who has always been questioned and will continue to be questioned throughout the season. If they don't win a trophy, if they don't win the FA Cup and even compete for the Europa League, the people will look at that, if they don't win the league, which they're probably not going to do, and say it's been a complete failure for him this year. So an FA Cup would sort of give him a little bit more credibility at the end of the season.
What if they finish fifth and win the FA Cup? What if they finish fifth and somebody gets injured? What if Rashford gets injured in an FA Cup game and they finish fifth? What are you doing then?
Well, I have to agree with you here. So I'm just presenting another side of the argument. Emmett, FA Cup, it's a weird one. I mentioned before that Liverpool and Aston Villa, who take on each other tonight. Aston Villa are playing their under-23s and under-18s. Liverpool potentially could do something similar. And the FA Cup is definitely one of these games that you look at them and you're like, wait until the teams come out before you make a decision on any sort of bet that you're going to have. What's it like to price up the FA Cup? How do you go about that when there's such an asterisk towards all these games waiting for the starting lineup?
It's an excellent point you make, because it's, despite the kind of the names, the big names, the team involved, like Manchester United, Man City, our price confidence in this competition will be so much lower than it is for the Premier League. We'd be probably far more reluctant to take kind of bigger bets in this competition in the hours before kickoff, because the odds can change so much once the team comes out. And just as a fan as well, it's one of these things where I don't mind watching the United second string because I'm a United fan. But if you're seeing two teams put out their second string in front of a half empty stadium, it's a kind of a competition that's hard to get excited about. But I think what's interesting this year is because of the condensed nature of the season, it probably lends a greater opportunity for the kind of the mid-ranking Premier League club outsiders that kind of Jer mentioned. Like Dale Johnson this week was outlining on Twitter that Man City would have to play literally every midweek between now and the end of the club season if they were to reach the FA Cup final. And that's obviously not including any fixture postponements due to COVID. So I think the clubs that are in the Champions League and European competition, I think, will be under huge strain to compete in this trophy, which gives an opportunity to the likes of Aston Villa, Everton, Southampton, West Ham, etc.
Yeah, and I think the Championship clubs would be looking at the Premier League clubs being like, oh, would you give over? I mean, we do this every single year, but maybe that's why we're seeing a more sort of competitive, sort of fluctuating Premier League table where nobody can really tell who's going to win it or not. Maybe the Premier League has turned into the Championship a little bit in that sense because of the sheer amount of games. You're going to get a bit more inconsistency. Before we get into the actual games, we do Paddy Power specials every week here on the Paddy Power Half Hour. They are available on Paddy Power's website as well in the Off the Ball section. So the Paddy Power specials this week, we're going with Patrick Gammon to score for Newport County. Patrick Gammon, obviously the joint top goal scorer in the FA Cup last season, lost out last, was it the semi-final or final, when Raheem Sterling scored. Patrick Gammon to score for Newport County against Brighton. What are the odds on that one, Emmett?
Yeah, so Padraig Amond is 16-5 to score against Brighton. He scored 9 goals in his last 12 FA Cup matches, which is a very impressive record. And that includes goals against Pep Guardiola's Man City, Mauricio Pochettino's Tottenham, and Claude Puel's Leicester since he joined Newport. And I think if he starts, I'd say he'll certainly give you a run for your money at the weekend.
And the thing that people are really looking forward to in the FA Cup is always a giant killing. So a Premier League club to be beaten by a team below the Premier League, what odds are Paddy Power given for that?
Yeah, we're very much expecting upsets. So we're short as 1-25 as there being a cup upset this weekend. Again, just because of the variation in teams, you'll see the kind of the lower league clubs be much shorter than they normally would against a Premier League team if all things are being equal. We'd expect there to be probably maybe between 3 and 4 lower division teams qualify versus Premier League opposition this weekend.
And
is that what you mean by an upset? Sorry, is that so you're 1-25 for a cup upset? What does that mean?
Yeah, is that's for a team below the Championship or below to beat a Premier League club in the third round this weekend.
It's not Aston Villa to beat Liverpool tonight, Ger. Don't worry.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be as big an upset as anything. I think Villa are massive. 13-1. They've gone out from 12s earlier on. They're on the drift.
Yeah.
Wait and see what Liverpool's starting lineup is. I'll tell you, it could be under 23s against under 23s. 6 or more penalties or games to be decided on penalties, because this is the new FA Cup format this year because of the condensed season. No replays this year, so it's going extra time and penalties. So 6 or more games across the weekend to be decided on that.
Yes, so we're 5-2 on that. We'd expect probably between, around 3 and 4 games to be decided by a shootout. Yeah, you kind of wonder why they even included extra time here. But I think we could see kind of a... It definitely will bring some excitement as opposed to the replay format of previous years.
Yeah, they've been changing the rules so willy-nilly. I'm surprised they haven't just gotten rid of extra time at this point, because games are so much more exciting when they're decided straight on penalties. Might not be the fairest way to decide a game, but it is a way more exciting way to watch football. Ger, we'll start with this Aston Villa-Liverpool game tonight. Aston Villa under-23s. Is this the situation where... We spoke about it sort of at the start of this. Do you play your best team when it comes to these games?
I mean, if Aston Villa hadn't had COVID running through the club, I would absolutely be urging them to play their full team against Liverpool. It's a Liverpool side who are clearly distracted by the fact that they are in a title race, that they've got Manchester United up next. It was interesting listening to David Myler on OTBAM during the week. He said that in the post-match interview, Henderson said, "We're not going to win against Man United or Villa if we play this way." And they're already thinking beyond this game. So it was actually all set up for Villa to go on a cup run. They've got a very solid team. They've got loads of confidence. They've got a brilliant, long-standing club history in the competition. And then COVID rips through them, and all of a sudden it's going to be a team of kids against... You say it might be Liverpool's second team, but you know that he's going to give Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain game time. You know that he's going to give Kevin Kelleher game time. They talk about Steve Okereke starting. They talk about Minamino. That's that team that Liverpool have, plus some kids. The guy who made his debut, I've forgotten his name now, who made his debut in the Champions League, hasn't started a league game for them yet. One of the young centre-backs, he's going to play as well. Liverpool will kill Aston Villa tonight. They owe them, not just for this year when Villa scored 7 past them, but they also owe them for the 5-0 in the League Cup game last season when Liverpool were off at the World Club Championships and Villa played their full team against the kids, and that ended up with Villa in the League Cup final. So a bit of history there. Liverpool are going to have to annihilate them. Liverpool -4, -3, -5.
Right. I wouldn't have it that big. Nat Phillips, I presume you're talking about, the oldest looking 23-year-old of all time. When I saw him the first time, I thought he was about 30. I was like, where did this guy come from? Emmett, are the markets reflecting the fact that Liverpool are going to be a much stronger side here?
Yeah, absolutely. So Aston Villa are 13-1, the draw 10-1, and Liverpool are short as 1-10. Just one thing was I've actually backed Villa for the cup. I thought they're the ideal candidate from kind of outside the top, out of the top four, with no European commitments. And so I'm sad to see my money disappearing this evening. I thought this would have been an ideal way for Jack Grealish to kind of cap off his brilliant Villa career. And we've seen Villa beat the big guns, the Premier League, already this season. So I'm very, very
disappointed. Listen to the Man United fan assuming that Jack Grealish is going to be a Man United player next year. He's not capping off anything. He's there in Villa for life. He's the new Matt Le Tissier. Liverpool minus three is 6-4, I see, on the Paddy Power website. I think that is potentially the bet of the weekend.
All right, moving on to Wolves against Crystal Palace, the other game that's on tonight. Wolves, Crystal Palace, if you said to me, or if I asked you who was going to get relegated, Wolves or Crystal Palace, you'd probably say Crystal Palace 9 times out of 10. Crystal Palace and Wolves have an identical record this year in the Premier League. Wolves have been really underwhelming when it comes to it. Crystal Palace have been really good at times and really bad at times, but I suppose Crystal Palace have the ability to go on either a great run or an absolutely horrendous run. It's just the nature of it and whether Zaha is fit. The bonus for Crystal Palace is the fact that they actually have another version of Zaha in Eze, and we saw what he can do with that goal a couple of weeks ago. And Jeffrey Schlupp as well is starting to bang in a few goals. Christian Benteke has reeled it back until 2013 when he was last good. So they're starting to really get something together. Wolves will bore you to shreds. I watched a couple of their games over the last couple of weeks. They're an incredibly boring side to watch because they're almost really defensive without giving the look of a defensive team because they just they almost bore you into submission. So the fact that Wolves are taking on Crystal Palace, Crystal Palace aren't exactly known for their exciting brand of football either. So this is one that I think you could probably take a miss tonight. You could sit down and watch a nice film instead of watching Liverpool under 23s take on Aston Villa 23s. So I think this has one of the potential games to go to penalties because I think it's going to be a draw. Jer, what do you think? Any thoughts?
Are you recommending Netflix and chill there, and is that what Roy, okay, well, lucky for you. Come here, which of these two teams, though, fits into the conversation we were having earlier on? Which of these should actually be putting all their eggs into the FA Cup basket? Because I think both these teams are effectively safe. You say they're on the same points. I would expect Wolves to inch up. Palace might get caught in a relegation battle a little bit later on in the season, but they've got star players, and unless Zaha leaves, I think they're going to be safe too. So wouldn't both these actually benefit from a cup run and the opportunity to win a trophy? These are the perfect FA Cup teams.
Yeah, I think Wolves would definitely benefit from winning a trophy under Nuno. Emmett, any thoughts on this game? What are the markets saying on it?
Yeah, normally I totally agree with you to give this game a miss, but I actually think Wolves are better. So Wolves are evens, the draw 11-5 and Palace are 11-4. Two teams moving the opposite direction. Palace's form over Christmas was very concerning, losing 7-0 to Liverpool, thrashed 3-0 by Villa down to 10 men, and were fortunate to nick a draw off Leicester, rested Vardy, Tielemans and Madison. I think Wolves actually played a little bit better lately, and I think they're worth backing, especially given Nuno's taken the Cups pretty seriously in previous years.
Stoke against Leicester, Michael O'Neill against Brendan Rodgers. Who's a better Northern Irish manager, Jer?
I think at this point, Brendan Rodgers has put together the better club career. I think what Michael O'Neill did with Northern Ireland was, and will rightfully be the stuff of legend into the future, because I can't see them qualifying for another tournament and I can't see them getting out of a group at any point soon. So look, I think fair play to him. It was a remarkable achievement, and he's parlaying it into a job. And this is the bit where we see just how good a manager he is on the day-to-day basis on the training ground, week in, week out. And I wish him all the best with it. But Brendan Rodgers is legitimately an excellent manager. And I know that it's hard for the Liverpool fans and the Man United fans to take him seriously, and the Celtic fans like you end up absolutely despise him for walking out in the club when he could have been the one who brought the 10 in a row. And instead, he left you with Neil Lennon. And that's why you don't like him. But actually, you could just step out of your own shadow for 1 second, you would realise that the body of work that he's put together is stunning.
I think he's great. I think there's absolutely no doubt that he is a brilliant coach.
Good.
Yeah, how genuine he actually is, I don't know. But when it comes to, I think it's his personality that's the problem.
The world's best managers are genuine?
Well, that's true. He's just a little bit more transparent than the others. But absolutely. I mean, he's taken Leicester to where he was expected to take Leicester in less than a year and a half. So, I mean, he's clearly a better coach than Neil Lennon is. I mean, look what's happened in Celtic this year. So I think Brendan Rodgers, he's definitely a top four manager. Whether or not he has the ability to take Leicester to the next level is the question. And I suppose that's where Leicester fall into the subcategory of a team that's fighting for the top four, but also they would benefit from winning an FA Cup.
I don't think so. I actually think this is the season that they can get into the top four and they can get Champions League. And this is where he cements himself as a top four manager by qualifying for it. And so if I was him, I'd be getting out of this competition ASAP.
Right. Emmett, I suppose Leicester are probably strong favourite for this one, are they?
Yeah, so Stoke 4-1, the draw 5-2, and 8-11 Leicester. Yeah, just with Leicester's Europa League commitments, I think they'll be taking this pledged even less seriously than usual. And just on Michael O'Neill, one quick thing. It really impressed me how he kind of evolved Northern Ireland from a kind of a team that played very defensively, underdog football, to a team that was playing like high press, really attacking football against the likes of Holland and Germany in the qualification campaign. I think O'Neill did a brilliant job with them, and I really hope to see him succeed at Stoke.
Yeah, and he's also taken Stoke from relegation candidates to eighth this year. So
I had to look that up. Like, are they a bet? Are Stoke a bet in this game?
I wouldn't put you off here. I think, as I said, Leicester would be happy enough to be out of the comp. I wouldn't put anyone off backing Stoke 4-1. Again, you have to wait to see teams, because we've seen in the last 10 years Championship and lower league clubs playing second teams in this competition and prioritising the 46-game slog or the Championship with the greater financial rewards at the end of it. But I think Stoke might have a go here. So, yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off backing them 4-1.
And just as we're speaking, the odds are changing on the Villa Liverpool game. Maybe some information has come in. Liverpool are now -2 on the handicap, and they've gone, they're 11-10 on that. So obviously, maybe news is coming through about some absentees in the Liverpool lineup as well.
Potentially. But just on the Leicester game, one thing to note going into it is that James Maddison, who has been in brilliant form, and Jamie Vardy as well, could potentially miss that game through injury. So that. Do you know what? There might actually be some value in that if you can look into it. Arsenal and Newcastle, you know, are Arsenal back? Is Arteta managing this revival, or are we just a little bit too quick to judge? I don't think Arteta was proven a terrible manager because of where they were, and I also don't think now that he's proven a brilliant manager because they've won a couple of games in a row. They've changed the formation, they've stopped crossing as much, they've got finally getting rid of the Ozil situation, and the younger players who they have brought in, Emil Smith Rowe and Baki Osaka, are real talents there. But whether Arteta can manage to build on this momentum now that Partey is back as well and actually go on a run. FA Cup last year, FA Cup winners. Arsenal love the FA Cup. Against Newcastle, who are in absolutely terrible form, I do think this is probably an easy one to judge there.
Look, Arsenal do love this tournament. They love themselves a little bit of hot FA Cup action. And as we all know, it's always darker just before the dawn, Enda. And so maybe this is the dawn of the age of Mikel Arteta. And that was the blip that all new managers are going to go through, and particularly inexperienced managers like Mikel Arteta. So if he's managed to manage his way out of that, then I think we should give him credit for that. And I think the point you make is really good. We shouldn't judge a manager in a club like Arsenal, where things are so chaotic and have been so badly run for essentially the last half decade or even the last decade. Like, it's going to take a massive reboot, and they're in the midst of that. So was he supposed to be able to do that in like a 5-7 month period and 1.5 transfer windows? No, too difficult. So I think the jury has to be out. He has to be given the opportunity, and maybe Arsenal could do with a cup run.
Emmett, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but I suppose when it comes to managerial sackings, Arteta would have been quite high in the rankings over the last couple of weeks. Are we seeing a sort of drop off in that in terms of his safety in the job?
Yeah, definitely. We would have seen. Yeah, he would have traded odds on the sack race at plenty of points. He's now, I think, out to close to double figure price now. Just to kind of just show how much Arsenal have improved lately. Before the Chelsea game, Arsenal were averaging 3.2 shots on target per game, which was similar to Newcastle and Burnley, and reflected that Arsenal were on the team, had a team on the verge of the relegation zone. In the last three matches, Arsenal have averaged 7.1 shots on target per game. To put that in context, Liverpool lead the league in averaging six shots on target per game. Those stats are inflated by playing West Brom, but they still had 7 shots on target against Chelsea, which is a major improvement. And it just suggests that they looked like they definitely found something by moving Smith Rowe further forward. And we've seen a much improved Alex Lacazette as well. So it'll be interesting to see if that sticks.
What's interesting before we move off Arsenal is the fact that Ozil is leaving them. But Emil Smith Rowe, the reason he's working is because he's playing as a number 10. And that's exactly the position where Arsenal were missing that link between forward and midfield. Imagine they were playing Ozil there this whole time. There's obviously something going on in the background that they're not playing. He's one of the best number 10s in the world.
He's not anymore. That's not.
He's not.
I understand you're addicted to YouTube, and it's not your fault. It's just
No. Spot. It has nothing to do with that. Have you seen Ozil play live? In the flesh.
Yeah, I think I've seen him play twice. I think I saw him play against the Republic of Ireland when we beat them 1-0.
Yeah, there are a few people and a few players in the world that I didn't really have an opinion on until I saw them play live, and Ozil's one of them. Arsenal, Man City, a couple of seasons ago, Man City actually won the game fairly easily, but Ozil was by far and away the best player on the pitch, and I was absolutely blown away by his ability. Maybe he doesn't have it in him anymore, hasn't played in a year and a half, so who actually knows whether Ozil actually has it?
I think that it is a key point, actually, the fact that he wasn't playing all this time, and it's exactly what the team needed. So there was sheer bloody-mindedness on the part of Mikel Arteta to not put him in. But it also means that he now has full control. When he's gone, everybody's going to fully see that the manager will burn me out if I don't do what he wants me to do. So I think, you know, it was Ferguson-esque. It was a very key moment for him to hold his nerve and not break, despite all the Arsenal fans saying, play him, play him, play him, and all the ex-players saying, play him, play him, play him. When Liam Brady came out, that was really interesting because he's obviously still really well connected in the club. And I thought that was a key moment where it was like, okay, this legend of the club is telling us that this guy is bad behind the scenes. I don't think that was an accident. I think that Arteta's power has been shored by this. And actually, it's going to be very interesting to see what emerges from this now in the next few months.
Yeah, it will be interesting because I have a feeling that there's a lot more to it than football reasons. And that will probably come out over the next couple of weeks. Moving swiftly on to Manchester United against Watford. Just before we get into Manchester United's lineup and who they potentially could do, Watford are a team that I will never miss in the Premier League because of the way that they act towards their managers. And again, this season in the Championship, it has not changed. They have sacked their manager in December, and they have appointed Xisco Muniz, a Spaniard, former manager of Dinamo Tbilisi in Georgia, and formerly played under Valencia, under Rafa Benitez at Valencia. So it'll be interesting to see. This is only his third game, how he's going to approach the Watford job. He's probably only going to be in it for a couple of months, so he may as well burn out quick. Manchester United, they need to make changes from the midweek fixture against Man City, the midweek loss. Donny van de Beek, if he does not play this week, there is absolutely no hope for him at Manchester United because he hasn't been coming off the bench recently at all. I don't know whether it's because Solskjaer didn't actually choose to sign him this year, or if he was a scouting error in the Manchester system, or what he's doing in training that he doesn't deserve to get any game time under Solskjaer, because he has been absolutely brilliant every time he plays. So I do think he'll come in, likely to see Mata, maybe a couple of changes in defence as well. Axel Tuanzebe will probably come into the starting lineup as well. So I do think Manchester United will get back to winning ways easy enough this weekend and will be fully rested and in good form for the Liverpool game next weekend, because that is the game of the season so far, really, Ger.
So you're both Man United fans, is that right?
If you want to out me, then yeah, go on.
Okay, yeah, so you're a Man United fan. You want them to win this competition, do you?
I think that United can go on an actual title challenge. Not win it, but they can actually push Liverpool very close this season if they're not in the FA Cup.
What about you, Emmett?
I'm pretty ambivalent about it. The thing that would concern me is Solskjaer constantly seems just going to win the next game. So I'd be worried that if they got to the latter stages, he'd start playing the likes of Fernandes and Rashford when he actually shouldn't be. I'd like to see them fully prioritise the Premier League. So one thing to watch this game would be, is Maile Sarr for Watford? Sarr is a player who's shown flashes of serious talent, and the listeners may have seen him score two goals against Liverpool to break their unbeaten run last year. And he was a player that really impressed me playing for Senegal and covering the 2019 African Nations Cup at work. He's only scored four Championship goals this season, but I think if he plays well at the weekend, we could see some of the bigger Premier League clubs make offers from him in January.
Yeah, he was unlucky not to get a move in the summer as well. There's a couple of clubs looking for him. Just in terms of Manchester United, actually, and the title challenge that they're going on at the minute, a lot of people are giving Solskjaer credit for it, and rightly so. United have clearly improved this year. They have a lot to go, but I think it's more down to the fact that if Manchester United actually win the title, which I think it's unlikely, it's not down to them raising their standards to where Liverpool and Man City were last year. It's the fact that Liverpool and Man City's standards have dropped dramatically this year because of injuries, because of COVID, because of the everything to do with this season. It's not to do, United are not at the level Liverpool were the last season and are not at Man City's level from 2 years ago. But because of the weird season that we're in and because of the fact that everybody is inconsistent, United are one of these streaky teams that they can go 17 games unbeaten easily. They've done it before, they can do it again. So I do think they are proper title contenders, not for all the right reasons this year. Just before we finish up then, we'll finish up on the Newport County Brighton game because it's a game where there's Irish interest. Padraig Amad, as we mentioned, loves the FA Cup. Brighton, Jer, we've spoken about them several times on the show because you're a fan of them because you like their XG, but I'm not a fan of them because they underperform on their XG. So where are you falling on Brighton? They haven't won a game since November now.
I think that at some point you need to get off a bandwagon, and I'm getting very close. There's like a creaking sound from the back wheels, and I'm wondering, is this the time? It's kind of slowed down. I probably wouldn't get killed if I jumped off it. I don't know, and I don't know, again, are they one of those teams who are going to look at this as a fixture that they use to get right and breed some confidence and score goals, and is this another opportunity for us to look and see where there is an outsider who actually wins against one of the teams who are a relatively big price, particularly a team with the cup pedigree that we're talking about here, and with Almond, like it's a brilliant subplot for Irish fans watching at the weekend as well. So I wouldn't be back in Brighton in this game with your money, Enda.
Anything to look out for in this game, Emmett? Would the fact that Newport are at home and that is a very strong stadium for them, or it has been in the past anyway, is that sort of leaning it a bit more towards Newport?
Yeah, I think that Newport would definitely have a home advantage. Sometimes the pitch there can be particularly poor, to be honest. I follow a Brighton-based journalist on Twitter, and he was saying Brighton could be making up to 11 changes here. So my recommendation would probably be throw under 2.5 goals at 4-6 in your Accas and don't watch the game. I think it'll be probably a low-scoring, tight game with Newport being very competitive here. Just one last kind of tip before I go would be, if anyone's having a bet on the outright, I think West Ham were the best bet, about 25-1. It's West Ham's strongest team in many years, with power and guile from Declan Rice and Souček in midfield, and genuine cutting edge in attack with Bowen, Antonio and Benrahma. I think the Benrahma at his best could remind West Ham fans of their kind of love affair with Dimitri Payet, and they should breeze past Stockport here. I think they're definitely capable of troubling the Premier League big guns in the latter stages.
Jer, anything you want to point out before we finish up?
Well, I think there's definitely value in those markets. Like, if it's not City or Chelsea, then Liverpool are 7-1, Spurs are 7-1, Man United are 9-1, Arsenal are 11-1, Everton are 16. Like, those teams are all capable of deciding this is the competition that we see as giving us an opportunity for the big day out. And there will be some fans you would expect in Wembley by the time the final rolls around. So I think that West Ham shout's a good one.
Yeah, definitely. They're one of the teams that are going to be fighting for this trophy, and David Moyes will try go for it and look at it as something that they can realistically achieve this year, and he can get all of his credibility back, which he's doing a good job so far in crawling that back from the last couple of years. That is all we have time for on the Paddy Power Half Hour. It's as close to a half hour as we've gotten it so far this year, 32 minutes. We'll be back again next Friday at 1:30 because we are looking forward to the Manchester United-Liverpool game, top of the table clash. Who's going to win it? Join us then.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.